You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, Pacers fans. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today it is game day, Pacers against the horribly struggling Oklahoma City Thunder. The Pacers are also probably going to make a signing official today with O'Shea Brissett to a longer deal per Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN and Jay Michael of the Indianapolis Star. Got to break that down. And Sabonis is playing his former team. He's about to be very important as the lone center at points this season. So that's what we're going to talk about today. A little bit of Sabonis at lone center, O'Shea Brissett, and Pacers Thunder tonight. But of course, I'm starting with the games because that's my thing. The reason we talk about this stuff is we talk about basketball games. And I want to talk about the basketball game. So Pacers Thunder, tonight the Thunder absolutely suck. They have not won since March 31st. They have won one time since the trade deadline. They are tanking pathetically. And in this game, they will be without a bunch of their good players. No Al Horford, no Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe no Lu Dort. He's actually questionable. He did not play Monday with a hip injury. Mike Muscala's out. Isaiah Roby's been out. Josh Hall's been out. A lot of players for the Thunder have been out. So they've been playing, you know, some interesting prospects in their rotation, you know, in their last game on Monday against the Wizards. They lost. I mean, they're playing nobody. Like, Darius Bazley's playing. He's pretty good. He scored 26 points for them. And Pokuševski's playing. He's a rookie. He's okay. Same with Theo Maledon. Kenrick Williams is okay. Moses Brown can really rebound. A lot of you listening probably haven't heard any of these names. Svi Mykhailiuk off their bench can really shoot. Ty Jerome, second-year guy out of Virginia. A lot of you remember him dueling with Purdue legend Carson Edwards in the NCAA tournament. They have some interesting names. It's just that none of them are particularly great at basketball yet. You know, some of them could grow into something great, and Shai and Al Horford really held this team together. But really what we were seeing is they were kind of held together by, like, tape and a glue stick, and you take those guys out and they completely fall apart, which isn't surprising, but they've just been awful for a better part of a month. They have lost, I believe, 11 in a row now, so not a threat. However, at the same time, on the Pacers side, Turner obviously out. We talked about that injury yesterday. You can go check that out if you want to listen to yesterday's show where we break down that. He's out. TJ Warren obviously out. And Sabonis already ruled out. He was ruled out a full day in advance for this game. So I am a little worried when guys get ruled out a full day in advance that perhaps their injury could hold them out for a while. That said, the Thunder kind of suck, and the Pacers have a two-day gap after this game off. They didn't practice on Tuesday because they had played 5 days and seven nights before that. So I kind of wonder if this is just like a precautionary, like, get him right thing for their stretch run and maybe hold him out. They just said, screw it, we know he's not playing, and do it early. Goga's questionable with his ankle injury. Lamb is questionable with his knee injury. McDermott is questionable with his ankle injury as well. So we could see a very hobbled Pacers team. Like, if Goga can't play, I mean, Jakar Sampson and O'Shea Brissett is your center rotation. Like, even if the Thunder are awful, which they are right now, Moses Brown is their starting center, and he's a wonderful rebounder for a younger guy. He only plays about 21 minutes a game and averages 8.5 rebounds. He's a monster on the glass. Whoever is matched up with him is going to have their work cut out for them. Goga can kind of block out and is taller than him, so he'll have some advantages, and Jakar and O'Shea can work and hustle on the boards, but it'll be tough, and I think that's where the Thunder can get their advantage in this game. We talked about that on Monday, but the Thunder are third in the NBA in defensive rebounding, so they do not give up many second chance points. That was the only thing that made the Pacers game Monday not super embarrassing, is they actually had a nice offensive rebounding night. Thunder don't really allow those, and they're eighth in total rebounds, right? So while they don't get a ton of offensive rebounds, just in general, they're good on the glass. They make that. Mark Daigneault, their head coach, makes that a priority. They have the worst turnover percentage in the league, however. That's where they really struggle as a younger team. So if the Pacers want to get extra possessions, that's their way to do it. But I think that if the Pacers do, you know, that their chance to lose this game is on the glass. If they just get dominant, they don't have their two centers, and I know that the rebounding problems for this team are mostly not on the centers. It's mostly a guard thing. But I feel like if Jakar and Goga and even O'Shea to an extent cannot keep up with Moses Brown and Kenrick Williams and Tony Bradley, who are all just workhorses on the glass, the Pacers are going to be giving up a ton of extra possession to this Thunder team. And while they're not good at scoring, they're 26th in the league in three-point percentage and 23rd in two-point percentage. Those extra opportunities can add up quickly. So it's going to be imperative to not get totally smoked on the glass. I think that's going to be key. And I think even without a lot of the guys the Pacers are missing, they still probably have a better roster. They'll have the best player with just Brogdon, which is enough. Like, DeRozan's been really good this year. I would put Brogdon over him still, but, you know, they didn't necessarily at all times have the best player on the floor against the Spurs at all times in this game. They'll have the best player on the court, right? So they should be able to win even with guys out. This Thunder team is really bad right now. And if Lou Dort doesn't play, that's especially the case. Unless the Thunder have just a ridiculous shooting night. They do take a fair amount of threes. They're 12th in the league, about 36 per game. But again, the turnovers, I think, is what's going to make this a good opportunity for the Pacers' backup unit to have a nice game. We've seen a lot of these Sumner and McConnell minutes are awesome because those two guys get a bunch of steals. They run the floor. They're hitting each other. They're hitting teammates. The hit-aheads, they push off makes even. You know, they're first in pace this month. I don't know if that's still the case. They were for a while. But I think the Thunder coughing it up quite often and missing quite often is going to lead to a lot of runouts for those guys. You know, one of them is going to be playing certainly a lot, maybe starting again in Sumner's case given who is out. And that's going to really help. So I think that's a good opportunity for this Pacers team to get a bunch of points. And there's some good matchups as well. You know, there's a lot of young guys who I really like and think are interesting on this Thunder team, but like Pokuševski's not a great defender. You know, stick a forward on him, get switches with him. You know, use Justin Holiday. If Justin Holiday starts as the four, which isn't out of the realm of possibility given the injuries, I don't think he will, but if he does, make him a screener. Make Poku play defense off screens. If he's guarding O'Shea, make O'Shea set screens, make Poku defend, right? Make these young guys show what they can do defensively, which isn't a lot in a lot of cases. This is a game where T.J. Warren would be magnificent. They have no wing defense on this team right now, given who's out. So there's a lot of places they can get matchup advantages. Even Goga on the inside can have a nice game. But I think Brogdon's going to be able to create a lot of offense as well. So I think it's going to be a lot of dribble drive, get those paint touches, get those kickouts. If the Pacers shoot 35% from deep, I think even if the Thunder play one of their better games, given the guys they have healthy, I still think the Pacers will win. That's how simple it is. And the Thunder are just bad. They're just a bad team right now. If the Pacers lose in this game, even if a lot of guys are out, you got to sound some alarm bells. The teams behind them are hot on their tail. So I think the Pacers will win mostly because of the quality of the Thunder. And the things they're good at are not things that necessarily like kill you. Like being good at rebounding is helpful. You know, we've seen how being bad at rebounding can be unhelpful for the Pacers, but if it's your best skill and you suck at everything else, you're kind of reliant on, you know, some lucky bounces every once in a while to win your games. There's a reason this team is 20-38 in OKC. They're last in the league in net rating. The Pacers should be able to win with a skeleton crew. That said, the skeleton crew is going to feature one O'Shea Brissett and some other guys, and I want to talk about O'Shea Brissett because some big news came out of him, or came out of his contract status, yesterday. So let's talk about him. But first, let's include O'Shea as our Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. And it's fun to choose who the Player of the Week is. You know, sometimes there's an obvious best player for the Pacers, whatever. But in O'Shea's case, he just earned it by exceeding my expectations. 4.8 points per game. And he already appeared six times for this Pacers team. He's only been on the roster for 20 days. Six appearances on his 10-day, including a start, 8 minutes a game. 5 points in 8 minutes, that's pretty nice. Done a nice job on the glass and really nice job cutting, and his defense looks phenomenal. He's hitting his threes. Like, I don't expect that to maintain, but O'Shea has played well and is the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week for the Pacers. His per 36 stats just look hilarious when contrasted with last season. 9.9 points per 36 with the Raptors, 21.3 with the Pacers. So we'll talk about what that means for him. But Michelob Ultra, of course, is the reason for this ad. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and at 2.6 carbs, 95 calories, Michelob Ultra is something you can enjoy. Joy creates success, and enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. So you got to try Michelob Ultra. And O'Shea Brissett is a guy who wins because he's happy. He talked about, after getting his start, how he was going to go, you know, scream in excitement. He couldn't do it yet because he was told right before the game on Monday, you know, he couldn't get excited, but he said he was going to go call his daughter and his wife or his girlfriend, I forget which one, and scream with excitement. So he wins because he's happy. Michelob Ultra, go try it out. So that's the news in Pacerland. First reported by Jay Michael of the Indianapolis Star, then second reported by Adrian Wojnarowski. Confirmed, maybe more important, by Wojnarowski of ESPN. Confirmed may be the better word, not more important. Jay's report, spot on. 3-year deal for O'Shea Brissett is the report from Jay of the Indianapolis Star. A three-year deal is interesting. I'll get to why in a second. But Pacers have agreed to a three-year deal for O'Shea Brissett. He said, that makes some sense. O'Shea's 10-day expired if you're listening on Wednesday, which you have to be because it's 12:43 a.m. because I'm terrible at timing my life. So it's already Wednesday when I'm recording, so you're listening on Wednesday or later. His 10-day expired on the at the end of the 20th. So yesterday was his last day. So the Pacers have to sign him to a deal to keep him. They cannot sign him to another 10-day. So they would have to do that today if they want to keep him. I'm sure they want him to play in this OKC game, given all who's out. So they are signing O'Shea Brissett per lots of well-sourced and great reporters. Three-year deal is interesting. I want to talk about that. I mused that that would be the case in a DM with someone. That doesn't really matter to you guys, but I think I talked about it on this podcast too. The reason I think that is because the Pacers have not used their mid-level exception yet this season on anyone on the team. They kept it, and what the thing is, even if O'Shea Brissett gets the minimum salary, which I don't know what his salary is going to be, that the contract hasn't been signed yet, the details aren't really out. I'll get it as soon as I can, but minimum deals, if it's actually, like, technically minimum deals are signed using the minimum exception, but if you use the mid-level exception instead of the minimum exception, you can sign guys to longer deals because the minimum exception can only be two-year deals, mid-level exception can be three-year deals. So by using the mid-level, they're able to give O'Shea an extra season, which could be helpful for team control, right? I'm imagining this contract's going to look like this. It's guaranteed for the rest of this season. Next year, maybe one-tenth of it or something is guaranteed. Maybe none of it's guaranteed. And then there's a team option on the last season. So if he's super impressive the rest of the season, he's a really cheap, good player that you can have for the next 2 years. If it turns out he just had a really hot start to his Pacers tenure, you cut bait. There's no cap implications, no problem. And if he's awesome, he's a restricted free agent with your full bird rights at the end. So really savvy idea to use your mid-level to give him a three-year deal. I thought that made all the sense in the world given how he played. He totally earned it. Like I said, J. Michael also reported that they are using part of the MLE for the deal. They have to use the MLE if it's a three-year deal. There is no other way for them to do that. But yeah, he's really impressed, right? He got his first career start against the Spurs and was one of the rare players that actually was like decent for the Pacers in that game. So good for him. He was excellent in that one. He finished with 13 points. He had 10 points against the Rockets last Wednesday in Houston. He had 10 points in 9 minutes and 41 seconds of action. He was really good. He had a three. He had his three other shots from the field that game. So that's where he left his mark in his first two appearances. He played for 9 minutes against the Jazz as well. Is he scored well. He had 10 points in the first game and 4 in the second game. That was where his box score impact was. But I think the most impressive thing for me has been his defense. He's really good at closeouts. He's really good at getting in the face of the ball handler. His positioning is phenomenal, right? He is able to help a lot. He's able to squeeze in and then get out to the shooters, right? He fits in so well on this Pacers defense. I wonder if a little bit, he played at Syracuse in college, if Jim Boeheim's Syracuse zone helped him, you know, with recoveries and a little bit with Bjorkgren's, you know, aggressive style and potential zone implications there. So that's been his big thing is the defense, but on offense, he's been a scorer. I said a lot to say. That's what made his start impressive to me. You know, they were only minus 6 in his minutes. They lost that game by 15. He shot 5 of 8 from the field and hit 3 threes. I don't think he's going to be that level of a shooter for the Pacers, but he had 3 offensive rebounds and 6 rebounds in total, so he had more of a nose for the ball that game than he had in his first two appearances with the Pacers. I thought that was really telling and promising for him that he showed some other skills. He showed that he can fit in with other groups. And he's showing a lot of good play as a slasher as well. So I was glad to see him have some rebounding impact. So you know that it's like scoring and defending, awesome. Like if that's all he does, he still probably deserves this deal. But like a more well-rounded player is always nice. But yeah, the defense is the big thing. Him and Jakar are interesting. I compared him and Jakar in terms of talent level when he was playing really well with the G League. Everyone kept asking me, hey, is O'Shea, you know, should they call him up? Is he better than Keelan Martin or Jakar Sampson? I said, I bet he's as good as Jakar. And now that they're both playing, I think I would stick with that. In total, I think they're about the same talent level. I think O'Shea is better as a perimeter guy. You know, he's got a little bit more handle, has been a better shooter so far. Again, I don't think that maintains, but maybe it does. And he's a little bit better as a perimeter defender, whereas Jakar's better on the inside. You know, he's got a nice little soft baby hook game and is a good rebounder and fights like hell around the basket on defense. So I think they're just different in their skills and they're about the same level of talent. Maybe you explore O'Shea a little more. You kind of know what you have with Jakar. He's more of a center type, and O'Shea can be a forward type, which his team needs. So
good idea to get him on a three-year deal. I'm guessing it's the minimum salary value just on the MLE, and it's so probably about it's basically basically $10K per day, which is an awesome deal. But yeah, so good for O'Shea Brissett. He earned it. Pacers got to be happy to have found a diamond in the rough with a 10-day contract. This is their second time, I think, under Pritchard that they have brought a guy on a 10-day and then kept him. Alex Poitras was on a two-way. Never mind. I don't know if they've kept any of their 10-day guys. Trey McKinney-Jones, Steph Hicks. They love calling up these Mad Ants guys, but it's good to Ben Moore. Ben Moore got a 10-day and then stuck around. So good for O'Shea to stick. I'm happy for him. He's going to be playing a big role in this Thunder game tonight. So we'll get a big look at him in his first game coming off of a big contract. So speaking of this Thunder game, I already talked about the Thunder, but the Thunder have ties to the Pacers, and the biggest trade of my lifetime for the Pacers, the Paul George trade, was made with the Thunder for the Pacers, and Sabonis and Oladipo were the return. We called it the Oladipo trade, jokingly, for a while. Now it's a Sabonis trade. They've both been wonderful returns for PG. But since Sabonis would be playing his old team, he's not playing. I want to talk about Sabonis, his season, and some of the stuff we talk about with Turner, I want to apply to a context of Sabonis, because we've been different in the coverage of Sabonis than Turner this season. So let's take a break and do that. Two people I want to talk about this break. I bet you can guess both of them. The first one is Built Bar. I had the coconut flavor earlier today on my lunch break at work. Built Bar is making the best tasting protein bars ever. I can talk about a different flavor all the time because I have the variety pack in my house. You got to try them. They're actually delicious. 100% covered in chocolate protein bars that are soft and easy to chew. Man, I had the cookies and cream one yesterday, and I might be revising my favorite flavor. It's phenomenal. That's one of their six new flavors. They're up to 18 total, maybe more than that now. They're doing like a side brand that's like they're crunchier. They're called like Built Bar Crunch or something like that. They're also delicious. They sent me coconut almond ones of those that were really good. So you got to try them. They're great for the health conscious guy. That's what makes them so good on top of their deliciousness. So they're good for, you know, maintaining the weight you're at if you're working out or losing weight, if you're dieting. They're low calorie and low sugar, yet high protein and high fiber. So go check them out. Built Bar, BUILTBAR.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15, all one word, and the number 1515 at checkout. You'll get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And also, we're talking about BetOnline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action, including Pacers Thunder. The Pacers were plus 1.5, so that means the Spurs were favored on Monday, and I thought that was kind of weird. I thought, I would probably favor the Pacers in that game. But I didn't bet because I typically don't, and I'm glad I didn't because the Pacers got absolutely waxed, so I'm an idiot. Shocking. I don't know how dates work, apparently, but I don't see Pacers Thunder on there. Tomorrow's slate, but they have Warriors favored by two on there right now. I'm guessing the bunch of injuries is the reason they just aren't listing it for now. So if you want to get in on any of that action, you can. The Jazz favored by 11 against the Rockets, which makes a lot of sense, but there's a lot of injuries on the Jazz. Who knows, that could be an interesting one. So go check them out, betonline.ag. They also have NHL, MLB awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on anything you can imagine. Head over to that website, betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON when you sign up. You'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Sabonis time. This feels weird because Sabonis should be covered a lot. Like, he's the all-star. He's often the face of the team. When other teams' guys discuss the Pacers, you know, he's got a unique skill set. He's really good, and his flaws have been sort of more discussed than his strengths this season. And I think that's interesting, right? It's kind of the cycle of, you know, the ascent of a player. He goes from a bench guy, and then you go, oh, wow, he's got some skills. Let's start him. And then they start him, and it turns out he's awesome, and fans love him, and he should be playing more, and then he plays more, and then he becomes an all-star. And then he doesn't really, you know, he got better this year for sure. He's got more refined skills and things like that. But as he's nearing his apex and they've tried to fit other stuff around him, some of the weaker parts of his game have been more exposed, and some of that is part of the coaching change as well. But he deserves some flowers for his season. Sabonis has still been amazing. And I think the more we watch Sabonis and the more we see how much he dominates, it's crazy how much screening and setting good picks is reflective in the box score, right? That sounds so stupid, but I mean, his assist number is 6 a game. It's not like he's like diamond dudes up cross court, and you know, he's doing a lot in transition, which I think is an interesting passing wrinkle for him. That's his big that's his biggest skill upgrade this year for me has been that transition game. But he gets a lot of assists off handoffs or in the pick and roll, you know, flipping it to the driver or, you know, back screens. He's got a lot of those going on. He's standing still for a lot of his assists. 12 rebounds a game, 2.5 on offense. A lot of those are on misses on rolls or, you know, on his own misses or, you know, obviously defensive rebounds are not standing still kind of stuff. But the screen opens up his rebounding game, 20 points a game. A lot of that's on the roll. A lot of that's even on the pops. Now he's working in a few more jumpers and threes. So screening really opens up a lot of Sabonis' game. And I think that gets belittled a lot. Screening is a really important NBA skill, and if everybody could do it amazingly, everybody would. Like, Marcin Gortat made a long career out of being the best screener in the NBA. Like, it's certainly a thing, and Sabonis is amazing at it. He's added in that transition game, which has been lovely. It's been awesome to see centers have the ability to dribble up the court, and he's not turning it over as much on those. Early in the season, it was like half the time it was a turnover. His turnovers per game are still up from last year, but per minute, it's about the same. It's still a little more than last year, but, you know, mostly about the same. So there's still some wrinkles with his transition game with those turnovers, but he's getting a lot of assists out of them. He's creating opportunities for his teammates, and they get to push the break faster, which Bjorken wants to do. I think that's a good thing. So his struggles have come on D. That's where some of the warts have popped up. He's being asked to chase around these guards. He can't do it. Like, he can't do it. And I'm not going to, you know, let me rephrase this. He should be faulted for not being able to do something. Like, that's a negative on any player. But he shouldn't probably be put in the position to do what he's doing so often. I think that that's tough on him. So some of his loss and impact is from that. But, you know, we talk about the solo Miles minutes a lot. The solo Sabonis minutes have been so fascinating because that's when he should, in theory, be at his in his best defensive situation. Domantas Sabonis is in the game. Turner's not, so he's guarding centers. Pacers' offense in those situations, Sabonis is in and Turner's not, has been wonderful. 111.5 offensive rating is very good. They're shooting 39.4% on threes, on non-heave threes, excuse me, in those scenarios. 39% in general, right? They're creating great looks with Sabonis as the only center. Their shot quality, right? Expected field goal percentage, given the shots they have, is 54% with Sabonis as lone center. That's great. Their defense sucks, right? 116.6 with Sabonis as lone center. That is terrible. That is super terrible. So that's really surprising to me to hear, and I still think even when he's not on the perimeter as much and he's better suited in his defensive role, the Pacers' ball pressure-esque style still ends up with a lot of ball handlers coming at him, and he cannot defend in drop coverage, or he cannot defend the two-on-one situations nearly as well as Miles can, and they still get beat a lot. So his defensive wrinkles definitely more prevalent and more problematic under Bjorken, but he is a wonderful, wonderful offensive player. And not playing with Turner, playing with more forwards, and I think we saw in the bubble last year what can happen with one center playing with a bunch of perimeter players. Shocking, I know. We saw what this team can do. If you take Brogdon out of the equation, that defense actually gets worse and the offense gets worse. And that's very interesting to me because I always thought that him and Brogdon tied together were problematic. But, yeah, super interesting that the solo him minutes are better with the bench. Or, well, are not interesting. That happened last year. But I thought that the numbers would be better with Brogdon. They are not. So, once again, he is pummeling with McDermott on the court, pummeling bench minutes when he gets to play against them. And I think that the warts he's had, between Turner having an amazing season, probably the best season of Turner's career, he's been amazing on defense, he's added some new stuff on offense, just looks really comfortable, Bjorken's got him energized, combined with some of the stuff Bjorken wants to do, not jiving with what Sabonis is good at, I think we've kind of harped on what Sabonis can't do more than what he is doing, which is wonderful transition plays, great screens, opening up stuff for other guys, right, making the lives for basically everyone easier. So he has the warts. He's clogging the lane a little bit, but playing against his former team, it's always fun to revisit what these guys can do. And he makes open threes for his teammates. He grabs these offensive rebounds. He's still a fantastic player, and I think that there's room for him to grow even in Bjorken's system. And as he gets more solo center minutes, which that will not happen tonight, but going forward in general, I think we'll see more of this, the interesting stuff he can do. And once he gets the ball whizzing out of his hands a little more with four perimeter players with him, since Turner will be out for a while, I think we'll see some of those net rating numbers with him as the only center get a little better, more rosy, and stabilize a little bit. I don't want to talk narratives. I don't care about who you think is better or who should be traded right now. I just wanted to evaluate his season and talk about it a little bit because they're playing his former team, and I have not given him his flowers for a while. Everybody deserves to had their season discussed fairly with the good and the bad included. Sometimes I prop up players too much. Sometimes I dump on players too much. I try to be as objective as I can. And yeah, I think it was a fun time to talk about Sabonis. I think tonight's game is going to be actually fun. I like watching these games with the guys who don't play as much. I think they're super fun and interesting. You get to see stuff you don't see very often and some fun highlights. And usually guys are a lot more jazzed up to see like O'Shea Brissett have success in the middle of a game, which doesn't happen very often or as often as it does for other guys. So it's going to be a fun one. Pacers Thunder tonight. And we'll break it all down tomorrow. Adam will be on game recap duty. And then we'll end out the week talking about the weekend back-to-back and what the Pacers need to do to finish out their season. So thank you guys for listening. We'll have more coverage throughout the week. So, of course, check those episodes out. And we will see you tomorrow.